Hello, and welcome to episode 63 of the Surreal Global Fantasy Football Podcast. Today, myself, Heidi, and You'll Never Walk Alone, are delighted to be joined by returning guest and J-League expert, Surreal Japan, to discuss his amazing year on Surreal, a J-League season review, helping others with premium content, and much more. So it feels like a very long time ago we welcomed John with Surreal USA. I think that was back on episode 29 in March.
29? Probably.
Yeah, sometime
ago. Start of the season. No, I guess it was already 8 to 10 weeks into the season, wasn't it?
Or 8 to 10 games, 63. Maybe. 63, well, yeah, I remember chatting to Surreal USA for the first time. And, yeah, it was great. He obviously, at that time, I'm sure he was, shall we say, more data-oriented than I am. I'm very much, I watch the players, I watch the games, I know the players, I know the games. I don't really look at the stats. So warning everyone that I'm not really a stats-based person. Even after now a whole season on Surreal, I still play too much with my heart, I think. So,
yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't care for these stats either. I sometimes have a little dabble, but no, you've got to go with your gut instinct on this.
I'd agree. Yeah, it's all about the feel. It's what you think that is going to happen to that player. Football changes all the time, doesn't it? So anything can happen. But yeah, if you've got a bit of inside knowledge or are able to look through the numbers and see something in that player, it might stand you in good stead in this game. So we covered a lot the last time. I think we covered so much of your intriguing background. But in that period, we've had such a huge growth on Surreal, haven't we? I think when you came on, there was about 6,000 users that had 5 cards or more. We're probably now at 40,000 plus that have 5 cards or more. And that number just seems to, yeah, it's quite staggering how many new people, new eyes are coming to this game. So I thought it might be worthwhile going back and giving a bit of your background to some of those new users.
Yeah, I'm all for opening up a little. Basically, my history is in Japan. I've been here over 30 years. I watched J-League from the beginning. All the players that I knew back then, having access, even then I was writing about J-League. So I met a lot of the players in those days, and a lot of those guys are now managers, coaches, even owners and chairmen. So I've got a lot of contacts in the league and who I just sort of chat to on a daily or weekly basis. So it's really great to see the growth that I've seen from nothing, from it being born, to players like Kyogo Furuhashi hitting the headlines around the world, and lots, of course, in between. So I'm really happy. My main idea since way back then has been to try to promote the Japanese football to foreign people. And when I spotted Surreal, when I started getting strange questions about these obscure players, will this player be playing this week? And I'm thinking, why the hell is someone in Venezuela or Germany asking about Oita Trinita Reserve? You know, I'm like, and yep. I discovered a Surreal about a year and a month, probably October last year. So I'm only like 13 months into my Surreal career. And it was a great way to literally spread the word of Japanese football. I've told, I don't know, hundreds, perhaps thousands of people now about obscure Japanese players and the best ones that I think are great. And I guess we'll talk about some of those today as well. So spreading the word of Japanese football is what it's all about. And I'm enjoying it at the same time.
Nice. And as you say, I don't think there's been a better opportunity than Surreal for enabling you to do so. It seems to be a platform that's allowing people from all corners of the world to get interest and engagement with football clubs that they probably never would have been interested in before. I know for myself, I'm looking at clubs everywhere, and yeah, that interest that you're getting in these Trinita reserves and other obscure players in the J-League is extremely interesting. I know there's certainly with some of the Scottish guys that play Surreal, there's a big following of the J-League, isn't there? And there's lots of guys who are staying up to silly o'clock in the morning over here to catch these games or catch these results. And yeah, it's a whole new element of their footballing experience now that they've got through Surreal. It's quite interesting.
I think it's the same for me, to be honest, because, you know, my accent might give it away, but I'm definitely from Europe. And I'm literally, you know, I couldn't name even Liverpool, for example. Sorry, Mark, but I don't think I could name.
He's going to kick you off the pod.
Six Liverpool players, or or four guys that play for Man United, Ronaldo and the goalkeeper.
Don't worry, I'm happy with that. That's one less competitor each week.
Exactly. So I've just started playing the common thing again too as well, just, you know, because I can, and it's quite fun. And I get these players who turn up and I have no idea who they are. And I was lucky enough to win a guy called Lassina Traore about 6 months ago, who I'd never heard of in my life. And it turned out that he was at the time, about $1,000 player. I was like, yeah, of course. He's since done his cruciate ligament injury. But now I've learned all about him. And there's about six or eight other players that I've picked up over the last year. I don't win too many prizes, except tier three Japanese. But I've found these players that I've never heard of. And I've gone and looked at their teams. And then I've got interested in teams. And of course, Mitoma's doing very well in Belgium. So I bought another Belgian player's from his team, and you know, I'm doing the opposite of what everyone's doing for Japan, I suppose. So I'm trying not to get too involved over there, because really I'm basically, if people look at my gallery, even you see 99% Japanese people, Japanese players in Japan, and of course Japanese players in Europe, with the odd player that I've won as a reward, or I've traded for someone who really wanted some Japanese players, and I've done them a favour. Even now, J-League season is over, I shall be trying very hard to win the ETH thresholds in the Challenger League and in the All-Star League, and also entering the Challenger League with basically my Japanese players. So I'm having fun, but I'm also learning, you know, what people are learning from me, I'm learning from them.
You mentioned there playing the common tournament again, and I think I'm finding the same. You're winning some common cards there. It's just a bit of fun. It's not nothing you take too seriously. You put in whatever cards, common cards you've already got, the best lineup you can, and you win some card at the end of it. And I'm finding guys that I've never heard of, but some interesting options there, and it leads you down that to do that little bit of scouting on someone you may have never heard of before.
Well, one question I'd like to ask before we drill into the actual season just gone, or I know we've still got semi-finals and a final, it's important matches still to play, but the league season's now over, is through the years of you watching Japanese football in the J-League, where does this rank in terms of its era, in terms of, you know, quality, in terms of, you know, people watching I mean, we've obviously got a group of hardcore fans that watch Japanese football now, basically because of Sarare. But where does this rank in terms of popularity through the years?
I think when it first began, it was the new kid on the block, although it was very much second place to baseball in Japan. But that's literally 29, 30 years ago now. 1998, Japan qualified for the World Cup. And then 2002 hosted or co-hosted the World Cup. Between about 97 and 2006 or so, we saw what I'd probably call the golden generation of players that obviously everybody's heard of, Nakamura Shunsuke. But there were, you know, Nakata. There was plenty of very good players that made the, shall we say, the first wave of moves to Europe. Probably 2002 to 2006, approximately. Saw some excellent J-League football and some great exposure to Europe for some of the players. The 2005 J-League season, I've just been interviewed by Australian TV on this, because the 2005 end of season was incredible. You should find it on YouTube. There were five teams going into the last day on 2005 in with a chance of winning the league. It was quite an incredible day. And Cerezo Osaka were top until 89 minutes and 57 seconds when they conceded a goal. And Gamba Osaka won the championship and Cerezo dropped to fifth. That was an incredible season and, of course, an incredible memory. And then there was a bit of a gap between that sort of golden generation and until about 5 or 6 years ago, when we started seeing a lot of younger players being interested in Europe again. And then those players have sort of grown up, the likes of Ritsu Doan, who somehow is still not on Sarare, even though he's playing in Holland. He's went like 3 years ago and has grown well. Or young players like Keito Nakamura, left Gamba on a loan, and then eventually has got a complete transfer to an Austrian league, which is covered by Sarare. So Keito Nakamura has been away. He was not like, or he was 18 when he left. And another player called Ryotaro Meshino, who, of course, was at Hearts, was in Scotland and going.
He was rubbish.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? A lot of these players have gone at 18 and 19 and have done quite well. But now, I guess with Furuhashi in particular showing the way again, it's not just Germany where the agents and the channels are already set up. to go straight into Germany because the agents are there, everybody knows it. Now that they're sort of branching out a little bit, and Junior Ito in the Belgian league is doing amazingly. Morioka in also is Piotr Morioka is probably the card I would like the most, especially since I was, you know, I knew him at high school, and now he's like a megastar on Sarare. I would say, actually, to be honest, hardly anybody knows him in Japan anymore because he didn't represent the national team very little times anyway. So it's quite interesting to see him on Sarare as like one of the most wanted cards in my sphere anyway. And then
sorry to interrupt, but just going off on a slight tangent there. Then Morioka, obviously, cult hero within the game for at least two seasons now. How close is he to the national team, or is the Japanese national team midfield that good that he is getting overlooked for another reason?
Exactly. I get this feeling that something might have gone on, but I've never been able to get him close to talk about it. I know that Suzuka Yuma, for example, who's at Sint Truiden in Belgium, but openly spoken out against the current manager of the national team, asking why the hell aren't I being picked on scoring goals. Boom, he's never looked at again, you know. I don't think Morioka's done that, but he's been stuck in this, this generation of players that when he was younger, he was up against already very established players like Kagawa and Honda to get into his position. And now he's got these players like Kubo, who's just breaking through in Spain and absolutely brilliant. Doan, Minamino. I mean, there are literally, Japan is famous for creating technically classy, skillful, speedy midfielders as opposed to the center forward, the big striker. And there is literally even now, I would say 12 or 15 midfielders that could get into the national team. Morioka is one of them, but obviously he's being overlooked because of, I don't know, I mean, is he in an unfashionable team? I don't think so. The other players in Belgium and Holland get chosen. So I think it was just bad timing. He was stuck up against Kagawa and Honda when he was younger, and now he's sort of past it. He's gone. I've actually got his national team shirt that he wore once. To answer that question, the Japan midfield is actually that good. They're just lacking a striker as ever.
And how do you see Morioka's remainder of the career? Is he the sort of person that you think is going to just stay loyal to Charleroi and continue there? Is he got maybe aspirations of a bigger move to test himself? Or do you think he'll end up coming back to the J-League at some point?
He seems very happy where he is. You know, he's like a reasonably big fish in a reasonably medium pond. You know, I wouldn't say he's a big fish in a small pond. But, he's classy, he's classic. He's doing very well. I'm not sure. Certainly, the Premier League, he wouldn't classify for a work permit anyway. And I think if he was going to move to Germany, which is a lot easier to get to for a Japanese player, he would have done it already. So I get the feeling that he'll stick it out there, unless someone like his original team, Vissel Kobe, who seemed to be collecting international players as a hobby, might reach out and try to pull him back. It would be nice to see that because, he would be a huge hero coming home. I haven't heard anything yet, and he certainly won't be until the end of next season anyway, that, you know, he's not going to leave in the middle of the season now. And if Vissel want him, they would take him for the ACL the next season in February. So
we've got Vanaka and Morioka for the foreseeable future.
I'd have to say, who was that first guy that you said? Vanaka.
somebody or other.
So yeah, I mean, it's he's great. He's a class. I mean, Endo Wataru is another player who I can't afford, and I've always wanted him. And now his card is on Sarare, and it's.
I find that amazing that you mentioned this guy. He was a player in Football Index. A game where it was only the top five leagues in Europe. That mattered to anyone, and you needed to be an actively playing player, getting goals and assists in those leagues. And so there was this guy, Wataru Endo, who always came up. He was always on the top risers lists. He would go up by 100% in a day all the time, and it would only be because a few people were buying him. But it just became this running joke. People would always buy him, and people were making quite a bit of money by jumping on him when he was at his cheapest point and then flipping him, and he never ever played a game. And then since coming on to Sarare, actually he started to kick on a bit in Europe and become a player that you'd want to actually own. Probably more interesting for the Football Index, ex-Football Index listeners. on the platform. But yeah, he was an interesting character. In fact, he's going for £700 for a rare card on Surreal now. It just seems surreal, surreal to me. It's a crazy world.
Tried to buy it. Yeah, I tried to buy his card when I first came on, and just basically looking at all the Japanese players and collecting them as opposed to buying to win. And Endo was at Sintruiden for less than a season, I think. So two of his cards got printed, minted, shall I say. One is what seems to be a dead account, and I've never been able to get hold of them. And the guy bought it for, I think, $1.50 or something. And the other one was...
$1.42, yeah.
Yeah, and another guy, number two, was tried to sell him for $11,000 at the time, and I was like, no, I don't think so. You know, I might have paid $1,000 even at that time. And now, of course, he's on sale, and presumably I haven't looked, but the price of the original one will have gone way down because he's available now. But yeah, he's still like $600-$700 or £500, right? So, and he's worth it. I think he was the highest statistically scoring player in the Bundesliga last year.
We're in our element here. I mean, this is perfect. I mean, there's a reason why you're so popular, and I imagine your DMs, especially on mornings where, you know, it's deadline day and you've got to set your teams, people must be popping you questions left, right and centre. So, yeah, I think we're in a privileged position where we can, you know, we can digress, we can throw questions that we genuinely want to know the answers to. And I think this sort of format is quite interesting. And, you know, Hybe and I have discussed, you know, what sort of content we want to put forward next season, or not next season, next year onwards. And we want to try and, you know, obviously maintain a Surreal core because it is the primary game that we all know and love. But there are a lot of other games out there at the moment. It'll be interesting to see, you know, again, how the people that listen to us, you know, what do they want to consume? And at the moment, it seems to me that those people like yourself that have got very fixed knowledge on a particular location, you're in high demand right now. So, take advantage of it.
I will.
So on that, what alpha knowledge can we get from yourself? Let's look at the J League. So the season's just come to an end. Kawasaki Frontale are the champions. I think most people probably guessed they were going to run away with it a little bit. But how did it actually pan out over the course of the season? What was the season like? What were the ups and downs, the highs and lows?
I think as you so said that it looked like they were going to run away with it. Then suddenly Kaoru Mitoma and Ao Tanaka were gone. And people were wondering, how are they going to cover those guys? And, they didn't seem to miss them at all, did they? Even at the start of the season, I should say the name slowly for most people, I suppose, but I'll try not to. But Nobori Sato was at left back and injured at the start of the season. A new guy emerged called Reo Hatate, who we all know now, and Celtic fans may even get to know him even better in the near future. We shall see, but players like Hatate came in. He played at left back for like 2 or 3 months, so that's why everybody thinks he's a left back. But he's actually a forward on Surreal, and then he became a midfielder. I'm not sure what's going on, but there. But players like that were absolutely classy. Leandro Damião, to pronounce him how the Brazilians do, is a player who's just won the Player of the Season and the top-scoring Golden Boot Award. He's a player like Brazilians at Frontale before him, has been held back and benched so often by the manager because the manager, Toru Oniki, took over 5 seasons ago, I think, and after Frontale were, I don't know, 10 or 12 trophies over a decade and a half where they came second. They were always second, ever the bridesmaid. Oniki played for the team before the J-League. He played in the non-league times. Then he joined the team when they joined the J-League in 2000. He played for 6 years with them, retired. He stayed in as a youth coach, became assistant manager. So in 2017, he'd been with the team literally like almost 20 years. And he took over as manager of a team that was always coming second. And now they have 4 titles in 5 seasons. Basically, I feel it's because of what he did with those players that are playing now, that he did them when they were in the youth team. So people like Mitoma and Tanaka, Hidemasa Morita, who left 2 years ago to go to Portimonense.
Don't talk about these Japanese superstars that go to Portugal. I mean, God, yeah, there was a goalkeeper back in the day. What's his name? Nakamura? I think he's been gathering dust on my account for about 18 months now.
I've got the same. If we can digress to him, he was, shall we say, too big for his boots, demanding a move overseas 2.5 years ago and not getting it because they wanted to keep him. So Kasia Reysol held him back. It seemed like he was, you know, going to insist on leaving. So they bought. That's when they bought Kim Seong-gyu, who has been a wonderful servant for them. Then Nakamura got injured and a concussion and a shoulder problem and lost his place and couldn't play for a while. And he didn't get picked up by the overseas teams that wanted him. And he languished on the bench for a season, basically due to the fact that, you know, held the team to ransom and lost. Eventually, he got his move overseas and he's been on the bench ever since. So, you know, some of these guys, they've, you know, they've got to know when to leave. As Kenny Rogers once said, know when to fold them. But I'm old and I remember that. So sorry, back to Kawasaki from Thai. So, yeah, I mean, basically the manager has taken them and given them the potential that they had, but they were failing to get under the former manager who just basically, you know, every game they might have scored 3 or 4 goals, but sometimes they've conceded 5. They weren't that good. And then Tanaka and Mitoma left in particular. And you know, suddenly you've got the likes of Wakizaka, who's in the team of the season, Tachi Banada. Shintaro Kurumaya came in to cover the left back because he could cover the center back, but he also covered the left back, which pushed Hatate back up. So he, you know, he's been able to juggle players around and bring new players through that, you know, I hadn't even heard of Wakizaka or Tachi Banada only a year ago. And look at these guys now. Tachi Banada scored a hat trick in the Champions League, I think. And he's got players like Yao Schmidt, Hasegawa, Kazuki Kosuka on the bench. He doesn't even use them. And Ryota Oshima, who's been basically injured for a year and a half, is an amazing player too. So, I mean, even losing two of the best players, or three if you go back to Morita, in the last year and a half, they've got players on the bench. And then he still brings in a Brazilian, a reject from the Chinese league called Marcinho, who again, never heard of him, plays him. And he's, you know, he scored important goals and done well. So there's obviously something good going on with the manager there. The players and the youth system, it works. And in the end, it was always going to be there. And there was the slight hiccup, or rather there wasn't. We expected the slight hiccup when they lost Mitoma and Tanaka. And nope, they just threw in a few more players and won everything. I didn't even mention Yu Kobayashi, who is a classy forward who doesn't play too much because he's got glass knees. But when he does play, he scores a goal. And to have him on the bench for the last 15 or 20 minutes, if needed, and they really needed him. You know, that's an amazing squad. And if they lose, Hatate, probably, perhaps Yamane, and who knows who else people have been looked at. And they'll still be there or thereabouts, as they say, next year.
So in terms of the infrastructure, which I think is quite interesting for those that have also been getting involved in Footium in the last few weeks as well, building a culture and looking at setting the tone for a team that you might be managing there. The way you describe Kawasaki Frontale to me is wow. They've got everything. They've got all the ducks in a row, recruitment's there, infrastructure is there. Are there any other teams from the challenging pack that you feel have also got themselves set up for success? And who, if any, can you see potentially being the closest challengers for, you know, to topple Kawasaki? Because it sounds to me as though, you know, you might as well go and put your house on Kawasaki winning the title next year as well.
Well, you're not wrong, probably. Yokohama F. Marinos, I think they peaked with Ange Postecoglou. Now Muscat is in there, and even the fans know that things have changed. He was a thug when he played, apparently. I don't know much about him, but I've seen some of his players changing that way. They're going to lose Maeda, it seems, or very likely indeed. I don't see them keeping up or improving unless they bring in some players that, you know, we don't know about. If they can poach good players from other teams, I think Marinos have probably peaked now. Vissel Kobe, it's been a long time that they basically have an owner with loads of money who owns Rakuten and no patience. I've spoken, been friends with managers over 20 years, perhaps, but, you know, certainly the last 10 or 12, where managers have come in and said, okay, he's given me 3 years and all this money. And then 6 months later, you know, they're just, he fires the manager. Atsuhiro Mura, who's the manager now, was basically the general manager and the chief scout, and wasn't really looking to be a manager. He replaced a fired manager a year and a bit ago, I think it was. And he's been given a new contract for next season already because finally, I think we're seeing some patience. Bissell came third. They've qualified for the ACL next season. They did very well with Furuhashi by, I think we discussed it last time I was on the pod, that he could have gone 2 years ago, but they convinced him to stay for a year to learn with Iniesta and help Bissell make the ACL. And then in 2020, they were in the ACL. So they asked him to stay longer. I'm sure they paid him a bit more too. They used him well in the ACL, and then he got his move to overseas. And I think that the likes of Kikuchi, for example, who I'm sure many people are expecting an overseas move sooner rather than later. I believe that, I'm sure that they'll keep him for next season with the promise again of, you know, playing the ACL, help us win it. And we'll let you go where you like in 2023. If Bissell have the patience to give the new manager a guy, they pull in a few new players. Muto at forward and Osaka were both established internationals who they've basically taken in. They're not past it, unlike some teams in the past who've taken guys who are, you know, just there. I could mention Nagatomo at FC Tokyo, who are probably past their peak. But Bissell have taken these two forwards who are unfortunately not yet on Sarare. So keeping out other players, if they continue to make the right purchases and bring in the right kids, and if they have any moves coming, could do very well next season. Kashima Antlers have an excellent setup where they always bring through the young players. As we can see, we've had Araki, Tsunemoto, Matsumura this year at least, as well as Anzai, who originally played for them, then went out to Europe and came back. Still quite young too. Antlers always have patience and know what they're doing with the Brazilians too, because they have a guy called Zico, who some people might have heard of, as their general manager and chief scout and whatever he is. He basically runs the club, I think. He has all the connections in Brazil, of course, too. Antlers coming up into fourth position at the end of the season there was quite ominous, and I think they have a good chance. Grampus, there's a lot going on inside Grampus at the moment that might see their manager leave. And if that manager leaves, some of the players might be upset and there might be some big changes at Grampus in the next week or two. I will be keeping, in particular, subscribers up to date, but I'll say what I can on Twitter as well. But there seems to be a lot of people trying to claim their own glory behind the scenes at Grampus and might screw up the team. I'm really hoping it doesn't. If they can stick together and fight this, they have a fantastic defense and they just need a centre forward that does the trick better than a certain Polish gentleman who may not be there much longer. Urawa Reds, they are the team, I think, that are growing.
Wait there. I've just got to get some more lead in my pencil. I mean, I'm taking notes frantically here. It's just this is a lot of alpha coming out here. Fantastic. Crack on.
I'm scrolling through Syria as we speak, looking at the teams as we go, and I'm like, whoa, wait. I'm right. I'm just looking at this one, and we're on to the next.
I'm so sorry. Hopefully people can record this and listen to
it. Ivy's going through the transfer market, you can tell. There's not one episode he doesn't buy something off the back of what our guest says.
Have you not looked at my account yesterday? I started buying some Japanese players. Just looking at your account, who you've been buying recently.
That's interesting, because I've got... There's one particular Japanese guy who I introduced to Sarare about a year ago who's basically got the same account as mine. It's quite funny. But he talks to me as well quite often, so he just basically ends up buying the same players as I do. So it's good. It's hilarious. But I've got quite a few people who, you know, I bought 3 Daiki Tommies a few weeks ago because I knew Tani would not play in the last game for Belmari. And I wanted to loan them out to subscribers, perhaps, or whatever. And then I had like 2 people. Why are you buying Tommy? What's happening here? And they were all buying Tommy as well. So I remember about 9 months ago, somebody literally when I was right at the start, somebody was telling me, somebody just, you know, sent me a tweet and said, you know, whatever you buy or whatever you bid on it, people are copying you, you know, and you should change your name. So I did. I changed it to the Koki's Life or, you know, somebody rules or I did this. I don't know what it was, but I changed it a few times. But that, you know, that was back in the past. But yeah, I mean, I do find people looking
at what
I'm buying.
You didn't change it to like I only trade with ETH and 20%, no? Seems to be quite a popular one at the moment.
No, I'm actually Pavel Trader in disguise. But, that's my other account. Oh, I can't do that, can I? But yeah, it's quite good. So, I'm learning as I go. I would advise people out there to be careful of copying me, because a lot of the times I'm buying players I know, I like, I just want to own, You know, it's you know, I scout as well, but a lot of the times, I mean, for example, I've got, I think I've got about 8 or 9 cards of Takuya Yasui, who used to play for Vissel Kobe. He's now in J2. I speak to him a lot. I don't think he's getting a J1 move in the near future. But if anybody looked at my account and saw I had 9 of them, they might think I knew something that no one else did. But no, I just like the guy and I know the guy and I see a cheap card and I buy it. So be careful. Back to Urawa Reds. Ricardo Rodriguez, the manager, has a very good plan ahead and he's got the backing of the board and he's got a lot of young players already in his lineup and he's got good targets. And he's weeding out some dead wood and a lot of people are retiring or being released, in particular, Makino, we all know about, who's, you know, he can do a job anywhere else in J1, probably, I'm sure. But he's not part of the future for Urawa Reds. And I think they could be the team that march on and take something from everybody else. I like the look of Cerezo Osaka. I think they're going to keep the current manager, who's basically a caretaker at the moment. And all those young kids that came through in the last few months or so when he took over are basically the kids that he trained up over the last 3 or 4 years. So he's got the dressing room, as they say. And I think he'll get the job permanently. And they brought Inui back from overseas. There was even rumour of Kagawa, but I'm not sure that would have been a good thing. So I think, and also Gamba, I really like Gamba's setup. Talking of setups, Cerezo and Gamba have excellent youth policies. And Gamba had a month off through COVID at the earlier season, and then injuries and more odd COVID things. And even back last year, they had to fire their main striker for 2021, I thought, Adam Nielsen, for drink driving. So they've had a lot of problems, and then they ended up playing 2 games a week and even not getting the break in the Olympics like everybody else. So the fact that they managed to pull themselves up from literally bottom place to 13th towards the end of the season, and they have some great young players coming through, Takao and Fukuda, Sato at centre-back. They've just signed, finally, on professional forms, Jiro Nakamura. Now, everybody knows the name Nakamura. His name is Jiro. First saw him play at 15 years old in the J3. He's played a few times in the J1 as a special high school teenager kid allowed to play. But he signed professional forms for next year too. So Jiro Nakamura, a name to watch out for. But cutting a long story short, Reds, Antlers and Vissel Kobe are the ones for next year to watch out for.
And breathe. No, that's excellent insight. That's excellent insight. And look, I think in terms of anyone listening in, you know, I think you've qualified it well there. Look, there's a lot of these specialist accounts now. I seem to see Serere plus the name of any country. And I follow a few, but you've certainly, you are the OG, Serere Japan. And there are obviously some other good ones. I get the reports now from Serere Portugal, which are also very, very good. And in general, you know, anyone that has this level of expertise on a particular region or a particular league itself, it really is invaluable. And especially when you see now, you know, the effect of winning prizes, the compound effect of winning prizes, even the compound effect of winning the threshold on a week-to-week basis, the service and value that you provide is without question. And so, you know, I know that, you know, back when you first started this patron service, we helped to champion that on your behalf. And I'd like to take, you know, the time to say to those that are new and haven't followed you yet, or are considering over this off season, maybe dabbling in the Asian market to pick up a team ready for when the season starts again in 2022, you know, do consider, you know, how valuable the information that somebody like this is able to share with you, especially if you're living, you know, in a different time zone in a different part of the world. Don't overlook the fact that a small contribution towards a patron service like this can ultimately lead to information that will allow you to play a different region, in this case, Asia, maybe at a level where, yes, you might not be able to compete with someone like Serere Japan on his own front doorstep, but you might be able to utilize, you know, 5 rare cards or 5 limited cards, whatever your budget is. And that might be able to yield you, you know, in addition to the enjoyment, 1, 2, 5, 10 cards over the course of a season, one of which you might hit lucky and get one of the big stars or up and coming stars that you've heard been talk about today. That's if you've got the time on your hands. But yeah, another big shout out for the Patreon service, because I think I've certainly benefited from that over the time that I've been a subscriber. And I think no matter what budget you're playing with, if you've got the ability to look at building a small collection of Asian players, yes, you go down the K-League route as well. If you go down the J-League route, I think you're going to find real value for money.
I find it interesting that you say compete against me, because I haven't really had a big budget, although I've got about 400 cards. I'd say like 350 of them are punts on friends or potential kids or guys who are even past it that I just like. And I've rarely won big. I actually won the, I suppose I had to win the special weekly when there was only Japanese players used. And I won that, which was very nice.
There would have been questions asked if you hadn't won that one, right?
Yeah, well, it was good for the ego, I suppose. And I actually came second in one recently as well and got some nice card, which was nice. But nice. No, really, it's really good. I get DMs and even people who put it on Twitter, which is very nice of them. In fact, I had one yesterday who said, thanks to Surrey Japan, I came second and got $1,500 or something. And I'm like, yeah. But a lot of them, they're just happy. I mean, one ETH threshold and it's paid for the year in some cases. And
no, just to clarify, when I say compete there, what I mean is in terms of knowledge. Now, the bottom line is if you've got half an hour to set teams before the deadline, you know, and you set, you know, you and we all have the same players, you'd pick the best teams. Or you should, in my opinion, you would probably have a very good chance of picking the best teams, or you'd be in the top percentile, given the same tools as everybody else. So, in terms of knowledge, that's basically how I see the Patreon service. I'm paying someone else for their knowledge on a topic, and how you apply that is obviously down to the time you've got, the budget you've got, and the belief.
That is the key, because I don't have all the players I'd love, but a lot of the people that subscribe to me do have them or go out and buy them, and it's great. I mean, because, you know, the site itself is pretty explanatory. That I've got various tiers going. Long ago, I started a €3 a month tier, and I still have three people on that who will never ever pay more. Because that's, you know, that's what they paid for at the start. I can't ask them to pay any more. But the €5 a month, I'm closing that down too, because it's called limited. That's what it is, you know. It's limited. I'm going for the tiers just like on Sarre. And I think it's a good thing for the subscribers that, you know, not everybody can join in, because, you know, it's limiting it to 60, 70 or 100 people having this information is good for those people. So if you're listening to this, I was about to close the €5 a month tier, but I'll leave it open for a few more days. Or how long was Pat? I better make it a week or two, depending on when the pod goes out. And but yeah, for 60 cents a week, a game week, you can get save a DNP or two. I've got a €10 rare tier, which people use, and they tweet me and Discord me and email me, especially, as you said, 2 or 3 hours before the deadline. I'm just sitting at the computer typing away like a mad thing, like those Shakespearean monkeys trying to do something right. And I've got a €25 super rare tier, which, and I really look after those guys. But the key point I've discovered in the last few months, I would say, is that not everyone does Patreon, or everyone wants to use a credit card or PayPal or whatever. So I've started accepting ETH on Sorare for the year. And also PayPal and also UK Bank. I'll make it easier. I need your input so I can keep going. So ask me how you can pay. But the most popular one recently has been €50 for the next year for the basic tier, where you just get the basic previews, or €100 for the next year, the whole year, in ETH on Sorare. So, and a lot of people, you know, that's just a couple of thresholds for them, and one threshold. So they have the ETH, so they find it easier to pay, so that's great. And to be honest, if you're having trouble raising that even, you know, look at your cards and see which one's worth about €50 or €100. Offer me a card too. I'm really happy to get extra people and help them to raise their the game in Asia, because, you know, in the end, I want everybody to do well. I want everybody to love Japanese football. I want to make enough to live. Or to pay for all the new cards I'm going to buy as soon as I've got off this and given all my secrets away.
That's it.
I'm going to check his account, see what he's bought while I've been talking.
Nothing today, no, but we'll maybe have to. Yeah, I bought a bunch of guys that you have been picking up. Some that you've bought in duplicate, so that Yasu guy that's in D2. I did look into his background, and I thought for £13, it's worth a punt.
He's a great guy, and to be honest, he was he was stuck in a midfield. He was a 19-year-old kid stuck in next to a midfield trying to get a place with the likes of Iniesta, yeah. Yamaguchi.
Yeah.
And he still managed to play a few games. But and he's, you know, he learned a lot from them, so that was nice. He's in J2 and they did well. He might get a move back, who knows? But for now, I support the kid. I love him. And who knows if he played for even, you know, a promoted team or a lesser team in J1, then, you know, people have already got their money back. So it's great.
That's it. There's a lot of years of utility out of some of these cards to come. So even if they are out of the leagues for a few seasons, you know, you can probably pick these guys up quite cheaply and start to think, okay, in a few years' time, if this goes right or if they do make that pathway back, pretty easy.
Yeah, I'm looking at your account now and you've got 1, 2, 3, you've got at least 7, 8, 9 cards that I've just bought recently too. That's funny.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about the transfer market and players moving to Europe. We've obviously seen a lot of links recently with J-League players possibly moving to Celtic. We've seen Maeda and others linked there. How does the transfer market generally work in Japan? We've got 4 teams moving out of the league, teams coming in. What do you expect this year? What's going to happen?
I should note that the relegation of 4 teams this year was a one-off, and next season there will be 2 teams relegated. 2 seasons back, of course, COVID affected the season. So the 2020 season was severely COVID reactable, and they decided not to do any relegation. And this was just before Soraya really started, so people might not be aware of that. But since they didn't do any relegation, they adjusted it this season. And that's why 4 teams have gone down and only 2 are coming up. But next season, it'll be down to 2 again, so it won't be so frantic. The Japanese transfer market in general is very affected by agents. I wouldn't say, most of us listening are probably, you know, have nothing good to say about agents in Japanese, in football in general, I suppose. But the agents are very strong over here, and contracts are, in general, basically contracts are for 1 year, which gives the agents every chance to move on a good player without any fees at the end of the year. But also for me, I hate that, because lesser players who don't prove themselves or perhaps didn't, you know, make the agent enough money, suddenly they've got no job or no security. Oh, they're looking for a J3 team or they're looking for a job in an office. So I don't really like that, but I'm digressing from that. The contracts in general are 1 year. They end January the 31st. This is aimed at basically stopping Japanese players moving overseas for free, because the European transfer window ends on January the 31st, unless something's changed. These players are under contract until literally the last minute. Older or more experienced members might remember a player called Shinji Okazaki signing. He played for Leicester, of course, and won the championship in the Premier League. But he was basically a very interesting case where he signed for Mainz, I think, the German team at first. He played for a couple of German teams. And they thought they were getting a free guy on February the 1st. But his contract ended at midnight on January the 31st. So in the end, they couldn't sign him on February the 1st. They had to sign him on January the 31st, and then they had to pay a fee. And S-Pulse got basically about €1 million out of that instead of giving him away for free. So that's the basis of that. But the Japanese transfer market doesn't finish until around April the 1st or so, the first week in April. It will be announced officially eventually. So Japanese players are free to do what they like if they're free. Most players, most teams, every season, it's agreed. I haven't been able to find it in writing anywhere, but at the end of the season, within 7 to 10 days of the season ending, which was last weekend, players who are going to be offered a contract must be offered a new contract. If they don't get an offer within that time, they are then free to talk to other teams, even though they're still under contract until January the 31st, technically, and they work out their deals. And then they sign for the new teams on February the 1st officially. So in Japan, basically, most players' contracts are ending. And I get that a lot. I see the famous website called Transfermarkt has all the contracts ending on it. And literally 95% of the Japanese teams' players have January 31st, 2022 marked as ending. So don't worry about that so much. The good players will get contracts. The better players will get contract offers from other teams. Whether they take them or not is another matter. For example, if I may take one, let's take Takuro Kaneko of Consadole Sapporo, who actually has a contract longer than a year, but because he's a decent player. He's already had offers from various teams, apparently. He's also officially turned them down, which is very interesting because it was quite decent money for Consadole. They might have wanted to let him go, and probably a decent pay rise for him too. But it seems that he'd like to stay with his the team that he began his career with. So there's a few players like that. So January 31st, there'll be a lot of movement. A lot of rumours will be made before then. Those players who are out of contract can probably be announced, and I can certainly find them out in advance, hopefully, as well. But officially, they will be the released players will be announced literally from now until the next week or two. We'll see a lot of players who are released, and they are technically allowed to announce a new team anytime they want. The players like, you know, those who are under contract or those who get a new offer, they don't necessarily have to take the offer, of course. They're now open to looking at other teams. So it's a bit chaotic, but please go ahead.
So now, I think one of the recent reports you shared out mentions that towards after the season's finished, there's another game that takes place with free agents. How does that work?
Yeah, that's right. Between Christmas and New Year, I mean, the Christmas now technically means nothing to the Japanese. Of course, everybody wants to buy Christmas presents and have a tree, but everybody works on Christmas Day here. New Year is the big holiday. Basically, Christmas doesn't exist in the business world, shall we say. And the Japanese footballers who don't have a contract, they basically get together. It's usually in Chiba, which is near, well, Kashiwa Reysol's ground or Jeff United Chiba, who had J2, their ground, because it's close to Tokyo, so sort of central in the country. And anybody who's got no contract basically turns up at Chiba for a weekend of, you know, kicking ball around. You know, everybody gets, one team gets yellow shirts, another team gets green shirts, and then there's about 25 players on each team who rotate for a couple of days. And there could be a couple of hundred players there who have no job, basically. There are some, I know, like literally 34, 35-year-old guys who have been dropped and would like to carry on. And there's a lot of, you know, 19 to 22 year olds who have just been cut because they, you know, they haven't got a job because their agent didn't look after them, to go back to that. So it's quite interesting. I'd really like to go to one, but I don't think I'm allowed to. I don't think it's literally for staff and agents and whatever. So, but yeah, it's quite, you know, it's basically a free for all with about 100 or 200 players who are looking for a job. And a lot of players get signed from that. Obviously, a good scout knows the players already, so basically he's going along to see to confirm what he knows. But you know, there's the odd player that will do amazingly well over the time or play in a different position, because let's face it, if there's 25 players and 12 of them are defenders and 12 in midfield and there's no strikers, somebody might get pushed up to striker and do an amazing job, and suddenly he's got a new career. You know, good luck to those guys. And yeah, we will find some players who are picked up by clubs on a free transfer suddenly that we didn't see coming.
Find the next Dion Dublin.
Yeah, I know him. Or Chris Sutton.
Yeah.
To go for player. Paul Warhurst. Might bring it up my age and my bias now, but yeah.
And your knowledge of Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, I guess you're right there. Sheffield, both of them are Warhurst and Sutton. So yeah, I mean, there's always the option for these players to get a chance, and I hope a lot of them do. So it'll be interesting.
How do you think that uncertainty, so the short contract length and then coming to the end of each season and maybe being unaware of where you're going to be playing, how do you think that influences the league? Do we see a lot of change season on season because of that? So a team like Frontal, they're going to lose potentially a few players to overseas. They're maybe not going to renew contracts. You've got other teams who, if they sign better, can take over quite easy. Do you think that upheaval does make it difficult, to build a team and to build a bit of a dynasty around your club?
I think, for example, you just mentioned Frontale, and the bigger teams will have a bit more strength when it comes to dealing with the agents or the teams that have some money, perhaps, that can afford to offer 2 or 3 year contracts to, because basically it's a money saving exercise for the teams, while it's the agents like it too, because they're, you know, they can drop the ones who are making the no money and they can make commissions on the players that they can. So, but someone like Frontale, they have players that they know and they want. I know for sure that they take a lot of university graduates in Japan. I mean, for example, the Premier League, I know there's 16 and 17 year olds who quit school and join clubs almost immediately that they can. But in Japan, and I'll quote, for example, Furuhashi and Mitoma among them, who basically finished university before they sign professional forms. And then Frontale have already, for example, in the case of Mitoma or other teams, have already got these guys on their books as specially designated university players or whatever, and they have them pre-signed to contracts. So they promise them a job anyway. So go to university and get more. And university teams and high school teams in Japan, it's big. You know, the high school championships in Japan are watched by millions on TV and thousands in the stadium. The high school championship final is a sellout in Tokyo. Wow. It's got to be seen to be believed, but you know, some of these high schools are really dynasties. So there's a four or five or six high schools that basically they have coaches that if they don't make the top four in one season, they'll fire this guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the league, you know, it's good stuff. And of course the high school players are taken and given jobs, but universities is not quite as big as high school because, you know, that's where they are grown. But universities is excellent too. And of course these kids, or rather they're not kids anymore, but the 18 to 22 year olds learn about life, get a career, get a bachelor's degree in something or other. They're more mature when they come along, and then they get 2 or 3 year contracts as well, because the clubs have already invested in them, in their time and effort and training. So and Frontale are very big with that. They do get university graduates. I think even this season so far, if we look at every club that signed players, a lot of guys of teams have signed from the high schools. I think Frontale have 5 new signings so far. 4 of them are university graduates, only one is from high school. And I think that giving them 2 or 3 year contracts and having mature players means that they're steady and the dynasty can continue. And then Frontale also have the glory, the pull, and some money to attract a player like, if I may mention, a transfer coming in now. Tatsuki Seko of Yokohama FC is obviously a player that does not want to play in J2. And he's wanted by many clubs, and Frontale have already got their paws on him, it seems. And some players that are dropping or coming from university, the best teams will already know about them and will have signed them or will promise them a decent contract. So the dynasties are there. So the players that, like, for example, we look at Sagan Tosu or Shonan Belmare. Shonan Belmare have an excellent youth system too, by the way. But Sagan Tosu have no money. They're always looking to develop players and then sell them. Or in some cases, if they get too good, they can't afford to keep them because the salary requests rise. So Sagan Tosu will again lose players this season. Teams are already looking around at the players at Sagan Tosu and making them offers. And because of that, not necessarily, these aren't players who would be rejected and playing in the pickup games, but they are players that in other teams, they would have good contracts or a pay rise. But the likes of, I don't know, Ayumu Ohata and Higuchi, who's a very wanted player. He's been out a lot of the season through injury, but he's a good young player in the middle there. Fuchi Honda. Oh, sorry, he's the one who's been out through injury. Higuchi's good. Fuchi Honda, Yamashita up front. These players are very likely to be turning up at other teams just because Sagan Tosu will unload them because they want to save money. Their youth's policy can replace them, and they'll just push them out and hopefully make some money on them and find new players to go in there. A team like Sagan Tosu, and a lot of J2 teams too, but and Vegalta Sendai last year, for example, are another team that basically close to bankruptcy. They will go to these things and they'll perhaps sign 3 or 4 players for free, and these guys were not going to get a job, and they'll get to give them a cheap contract. And then if they do well, they'll sell them for a profit next year. So the uncertainty is there for the lesser clubs. So there are clubs that will never actually challenge for the top 6 or 8. Because of the way they are run. Sagan Tosu were doing extremely well last season and this season, but in the end, they just sort of peter out because they haven't quite got the squads to do it, or they haven't got they've got manager problems at Sagan Tosu. Power harassment, would you believe? The guy has been beating up players, apparently, in the dressing room.
Really?
And threatening other staff, you know, pushing them against drinks machines and whatever, all sorts. He seems to be a great manager. But, and to be honest, let's face it, Mourinho or Alex Ferguson or whatever, I'm sure they've smacked a player around, you know, in the past, you know. But if it comes out in Japan, this kind of thing, then it's frowned upon deeply. And he might have to move on, which is a shame because he's developed some great youngsters and a good team that eventually came 7th in the J League this year. with very little budget whatsoever. So basically, there are teams that will take these players for cheap or for free, but they're never quite going to make it. I would say it's a bit like Leicester City in the Premier League, as it was 10 years ago, and they were never quite, and suddenly they won the championship against all the odds. I'm not sure if that's ever going to happen in the J League, but some might argue that it has happened. 5 or 6 years ago, Kashiwa Reysol won the J League after being promoted. And 4 or 5 years ago, Gamba Osaka won the J League, although they're a big team. They were relegated for a season. They came back and won the treble. So, you know, the right management, the right team, and just the right things going on all around the club. You know, things can happen. I think Avispa Fukuoka have surprised a lot of people this season. They've been up in J1 four or five times in their career, in their history. And I think they've only stayed up. I think this is the first time they've ever stayed more than one season in J1 after promotion. They have a manager who was offered a job by Vissel Kobe last season and has been offered a job by various teams this season. He's pledged his future again to this small club in the south of Japan, who have very little budget, but they have a great fans. They have a great mentality around the whole team, and a very decent defense, and players that work together for each other. So small teams can do well, but I don't think they're going to be winning the J League anytime in the near future. To sort of digress again from that point, but yeah, players will come and go, but dynasties. I think it takes money and big players in the end, yeah.
And the teams coming up, I mean, I say you've given some examples there of Reysol, that the J League at the first attempt after getting promoted. What about the fortunes of the clubs that we'll see next year on the platform?
Not a chance. Say Kyoto Sanga are coming up for the first time in 10 or 12 years, but they are a team with a storied history. They were close to the original J League. They actually began, I think they managed to get to J1 around 1996, after starting in the first J2 or 97. Kazu, who is now playing for Yokohama FC at the age of 54, he played for them in his youth at 33 years old, back in the mid late 90s. What's interesting at Kyoto Sanga is they have a manager, his name is Chokije. He was fired from he was forced out of Shonan Bellmare about 2 years ago for, coincidentally, power harassment. It seems like a big thing, eh? He was basically treating people and staff and players badly, but was getting the right results. But it was discovered, you know, that he wasn't a nice guy. You know, again, let's face it, Mourinho or whoever, they're probably not nice guys either, you know. But that's what gets things done. But he's signed on for Kyoto Sanga in J2. And he's brought them up in the first attempt. Because he's a former Shonan Bellmare manager, he will be linked with current and former Bellmare players. In particular, he has one there already. Temma Matsuda is on Sorare. His card is on Sorare. None of them are for sale. Sorry, don't go checking. And he'll play for Sanga next year because he's a decent player. And then there's a guy called Mitsuki Saito, who's currently in Russia. And for those players, managers on Sorare who've been holding him for a while, he would likely be at least approached by his former manager for a place in J1 under this new team. I think also players like, please, you know, don't go out and buy him on this, but someone like Makino from Reds would be an excellent addition to a team like this, who have just released a couple of their centre-backs. And he has experience, he has fight, he has the kind of thing that brings up a team. He's a clown, he's a joker, but he's very serious on the field. Great story about him in the last game. I can bring up later if you ask me and remind me. But so Kyoto Sanga, because of the Shonan Bellmare connection, they may bring in some players connected to them. They have a decent squad and a good chance of staying up, especially with only two teams going down. But there's no way they're coming in the top six or challenging for the league. Jubilo Iwata, they've only been down a couple of years. They were not quite original members of the J League in 93. They were offered a place in the J1, well, it was only the J League then, but refused it for the first season because they wanted to get themselves together a bit more. But they came into J League in the second season, 94, if I remember correctly. They are a very early powerhouse. They won leagues and championships and cups and things and had some very famous players. They are Shimizu S-Pulse's local rivals. It's one of the biggest hated rivalries and local derbies in the country. They have, for players on Surrey, they have a 41-year-old legend called Yasuhito Endo, who was on loan from Gamba. Not many of his cards on Surrey. I've got two of them, including the number seven, which is his number. And he's told Gamba that he would like to play for Jubilo Iwata next season in J1, and he wouldn't be out of place. I mean, he's a record holder of claps for Japan. He's a midfield general. He's the Japanese Iniesta, for want of a better word. You know, you won't see him sprinting down the wing much, but he can take free kicks and set pieces, and he can pick out someone from 50 yards. So
that's some Endo high Yasuhito. Praise, Japanese Iniesta.
Yeah, but he's got hair. So there's also a couple of defenders, Makito Ito and Ryo Takano, who are on loan from Yokohama F Marinos. Both cards are on Surrey. They've been playing, 50% of the games in J2, so that probably doesn't say too much for them, but they are on Surrey if needed. There's a midfielder called Shota Kaneko, who was on loan from S-Pulse. That's like, you know, Alexander Trent Arnold, whatever his name is. Trent Alexander Arnold? You see, yeah, that's how ignorant I am about Premier League. He's like, that's like him going to Everton for a season. But Kaneko is on Surrey already, Shota Kaneko. And he'll either be playing in J1 for Jubilo Iwata next season or return to Espoz. So he's a decent one. They've also got a Moldovan goalkeeper who I don't think has played a single game this year. But Alexei Kosalev is also on Surrey, if you want to do a little bit of scouting, but I wouldn't expect him to be playing either. So a team with a very average budget, a small ground in the middle of Japan, but former powerhouses, I'm trying to consider. Let's say this is a bit like Sunderland coming back to the Premier League, perhaps. They're not going to do anything, but hopefully they'll survive. You know, that's basically what they want to do, consolidate. So the two teams coming up, I don't think there's much to worry about. They won't have many stars, but there may be some players in other teams that are on the bench right now, or perhaps veterans, 31, 32-year-olds, or some kids who get on loan. So we might see some use of the cards that you have now that are doing nothing. Being played at these two teams, that could be useful. And I'll keep subscribers in touch with anything I hear. When I say subscribers, it seems a bit selfish, I know, but going back to the Patreon, these people are paying me for this information, so I don't tweet too much, but I never refuse to answer a DM, and I do put things out on Twitter as often as I can. But yeah, the subscribers do get this information first.
As they should, and there's a lot of it for them to take in.
we didn't cover the two upcoming semi games and the ramifications of those games before the season does officially come to a close.
Well, there is a bot on Discord that when you mention the cups, it comes up immediately and says, the cups are not covered on Surrey, which really irritates me. So if that bot is listening... These games again are not covered on Surrey, but we got Cerezo Osaka against Urawa Reds. The game has been played at the Red Stadium. It's a one-off. It's not like two legs as it might be sometimes. It's the Emperor's Cup. Usually the final is on New Year's Day, and it's the season climax. And it's called the Emperor's Cup because back in 1920, the Emperor decided he wanted something. It's the second oldest cup tournament in the world, as far as I know. And the original trophy was donated by the English FA, and it's modelled on the FA Cup. So literally any team, I played in the Emperor's Cup 28 years ago, I think, in the last 256, I think it was. So literally any team that plays in a local league can play in the FA Cup, in the Emperor's Cup, just like they can in the FA Cup. So, if you find a team like Honda FC, who are in the JFL, the fourth tier of the J League, often in the last 8 or 16 of the Emperor's Cup, which is quite good. For the Emperor's Cup, the winner gets a place in the ACL. So it is a very important semi-final for four teams. Kawasaki Frontale against Oita Trinita is the other one. And I don't think there's any doubt that Kawasaki Frontale are going to win that, famous last words. But if Frontale win the Emperor's Cup, that means they have won the double. And the team that came fourth in J1 now enters the Asian Champions League in the playoff stage. That will be Kashima Antlers. And Vissel Kobe, who are currently in third place in the J1, will at the moment have to enter it through a playoff. If Kawasaki Frontale win the double, Antlers will take the playoff and Vissel Kobe will join in straight in the group stage of the ACL. So it's quite a big thing for at least those two teams, who will be hoping for a Frontale win. Urawa Reds and Cerezo Osaka, of course, they both want to win it to get a place in the ACL, and in particular Reds, I know will be almost expecting it. I know that they're really going for it. They're planning big moves to big signings and big budgets for next season. And it would be really good for them if they were in the ACL too. So there's a lot riding on it. It's not just some semi-final of the Coca-Cola Cup or whatever you call it over there these days. It's the Asian Champions League. So there is a lot riding on it, and it's going to be very interesting.
But for Serrer managers and Serrer owners, the Asian Champions League throws in a little bit more uncertainty in terms of team selection, because as we've seen throughout this season, there is quite a significant rotation for the teams who, depending on which trophy they're prioritising.
Yeah, well, when the Asian Champions League, sadly, I guess in the life of Serrer, shall we say, the Asian Champions League has been a bit of a mess, because certainly last year the teams went off one particular destination for about 2.5 weeks and played 6 games. That doesn't usually happen. It's usually a midweek game on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. I've been talking to someone in one of the teams who's going to the Champions League, and another one that was hoping to go to the Champions League. So, and they're still unsure of the setup next year. And they're hoping that it will be home and away midweek games, but they're not optimistic, especially as, you know, literally a week ago, the Omicron, an anagram of moronic, by the way, came into being. And so who knows what's going to happen next year in the ACL. But ideally, the teams will play their strongest, you know, they're strong, at least until they qualify or are knocked out of the group stage. I found that in the past, the teams did play and did prioritise the league. There may have been one or two players who were slightly injured, or in some cases, there are too many foreigners. They do limit the amount of foreigners, but they register them in advance, so at least we will know who's not going. So I feel and I hope that whoever's in the Champions League next season will prioritise it over something else. There is what we call the Levan Cup, which in Britain, and I think in Scotland and England as well, is called the League Cup, or Coca-Cola Cup, or whatever else it's been called in the past. Those teams in the ACL are not in the League Cup, which allows them the same. The League Cup weekends, or rather weekdays, have been selected so that they play their games at the same time as the ACL. So the teams in the ACL do not play in the League Cup, but they are given a free pass until the quarterfinals. When their 4 teams come out of the main League Cup qualification, they get thrown in with the 4 ACL teams after the main part of the ACL is done. So there's no need to prioritise over a League Cup, because there isn't one for the ACL teams. So hopefully more utility, more games, and more buck for your value for the Serrer managers. So yeah, more scouting too.
Amazing. All amazing. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. To talk about my favourite moment or game or whatever of the season, and I'm not sure I could have one really, but for me, and I think for many people who managed to get to watch these games, and I could tell you how to watch them later, or at least try, it's for me, the season is Kikuchi. You know, the guy making a big stop on the line, or a big tackle, or scoring a goal, he goes nuts and screams. And you can hear him in these stadium. You can hear him on the TV. And I really like the fact that he makes a header and then he goes, yeah!
So a bit like Chiellini.
I've heard of him, isn't he? The ugly guy with the growth who kicks people around from Italy, right? But yeah, I love it. And then last week, I mentioned Makino earlier, and I said I was going to mention this. So Makino was released by Reds, but it wasn't really his final game. Was more the fact that one of the J-League referees also had their final game after about 500 games of refereeing. For those who managed to watch the game, his name is Murakami, and he's the guy with all the grey hair, which has been getting a bit like a mop in the last month or two. I guess he's been preparing for for normal civilian life. But this guy was, and for me, he's also the best referee in Japan, because he played football in his youth. He actually knows the game, as opposed to, I know it's in Japan, it's the same, but it's all over the world. It's the fact that referees, they know the rules, they know the laws of the game, but they don't know the game. You know, they don't know how to play the game. They don't know the difference between an accidental foul, or a guy who slips up and smashes into the back of someone, and the guy who goes in with his elbow. They don't really see the difference. They just see a foul. But Murakami played the game himself to quite a high level. So I like him a lot. He retired. And then Makino, at the end of the game, Makino went up to him. He ripped off his shirt and he gave it to him, which was very nice. And underneath his shirt, he had a message to Murakami congratulating him on his retirement. Now, of course, those of them who know the laws of the game know that revealing a message on an undershirt is a yellow card offence. So he promptly pulled out his yellow card for Makino but with a smile on his face. So that was nice. And then the referee got the bumps from all the players. Would you see that anywhere else in the world? And they didn't drop him either. They managed to pick him up and let him down carefully. So the respect shown to the Japanese referees here, I really like a lot. And this was really cool. I mean, respect for officials is very common here. And
that does not happen in the UK.
I've often said that in the national team, it actually hinders prospects sometimes of the games because the Japanese players just do not do the professional foul or the dirty thing when they should, and they don't surround the referee demanding things. But I like that, you know. I mean, it's, you know, the Japanese don't have a naughty player in the middle usually, which, you know, it is lacking.
Think Simeone's going to do any management late in his career over in the J League then?
Well, it would be nice. I mean, Sergi Samper sort of got the reputation for being a bit dirty, but I just think he was a bit slow in his first year, and he's got a lot better. And there are a couple of Japanese players who you know, they're a bit sneaky, shall we say, but it's very rare. I like it, but for the national team, I would like a guy who gets stuck in and, you know, if somebody elbows him in the back, you know, next time they go and kick him in the balls or something. I don't know. So that's good. So it was really nice. That was one of my favourite moments and really absolutely nothing to do with Soraya whatsoever. So, yeah, I'm going to enjoy some time off, but my finger will be on the pulse.
Lovely. So we'll hope to find out all you've learned over the next 2 months and all the research you've done when we welcome you back on. But it's been an absolute pleasure getting you back today. I think our listeners are going to have so much information to take in there. They're going to need a notepad as they listen to this.
You have to re-listen to this back multiple times just to keep jotting down those family names.
Absolutely. So it's been a great pod. Thank you.
I've really enjoyed it. I mean, I just, you know, I guess you can tell I was totally unscripted there. So my apologies for going on and on about the game I love, but hopefully it's useful to someone. And thank you for letting me talk about it.
That's the best way. Thank you again.
My pleasure.
So that brings us to the end of today's Soraya Global Fantasy Football Podcast. I hope you found it useful. As always, if you could like, subscribe and leave a review, then we can help introduce the fantastic concept to more users. See you next time.